Welcome to Light Treason News, everyone. Pop culture, politics, and a sprinkle of treason. I'm with Meredith. We're back from Scotland.
Oh, yay. We're back.
We did it. And oh, my God. We did so much, you guys.
So much. It was crazy.
Trying not to be, like, annoying about it on social media or, like, Instagram, where, like, I did one post, but I could post, like, 20 posts and still just be scraping the surface of how many photos we took. So I'm like trying to pace myself and not be annoying about it. But holy shit.
I know. It's really tough because the cities were great. Edinburgh and Glasgow, both amazing. Highly recommend. But also got to run around in the Highlands and see some ridiculously beautiful stuff. It was wild.
I know we were like shell-shocked because we were on a bus all day, but I'm still like processing how insane the Highlands were.
Some of the most ridiculous vistas, just the scale of it. I mean, we were in this place called Glencoe, and there was a little house in this little, you know, dip, little valley. And the scale of the mountains, it was just insane. Like, I said this to Allison while we were on the tour. It was like somehow almost more impressive than when I went to Iceland and was hanging out in fjords.
Yeah.
It was wild. I was not expecting that.
We were in a fucking castle for a wedding. Guys, it was a lot. We had the best time. We went to the best restaurants, had the best meals. We only got in one fight where we both cried. It was great. It was great.
Yeah.
Pretty ideal.
I honestly think that if you can go on a vacation that has that amount of real conflict,
uh-huh,
and all of it, like, to the ratio of activities and, like, cool shit, well worth it. Take the 10 minutes of, like, crying every time.
It very much felt like a sister fight where it was just, like, we had been doing so much and traveling and, like, dealing with shit. Like, guys, do you know, when you go abroad, your cell phone don't work. And listen, I know I've mentioned that before on this show. So you think I would have, like, troubleshooted for that very scenario. But every time I travel abroad, I'm like, I'll just figure it out. And guess what? I never fucking do. I just am fucked without a wireless connection much of the time. So I would say I think it's worth it. If you're traveling abroad, just get a new SIM card. Like, fuck it. I know it's annoying, but you're truly stranded without one. So we were, like, dealing with a lot of tech issues. So I think one blowout is good for the scale of what we were doing the entire time. We went to so many cute little shops. Guys, it was so fun. We're back. If you want to see any of those photos, you can follow either of us on Instagram. But on our way back, when we were on the plane, first of all, that was a whole thing because Meredith got fucked with her flight.
Yeah,
that was unreal.
It was not fun.
What the fuck? Was it Aer Lingus?
It was Aer Lingus. And they seemingly canceled every flight that weekend from Edinburgh to Dublin. And
there
so
was
I
like bad weather that. And it was just the flights to Ireland and you had a layover. And I was just sort of like, let's just go to the airport and they'll go to the Aer Lingus desk. They'll be a representative. I think it's a better idea to try to deal with it in person because maybe they could just put you on a flight right away. Yeah.
And you were totally right. And that's exactly what I wanted to do. Like, it was causing me so much anxiety to try and do it online. There's no Aer Lingus employee at the airport when we get there. So thank God for Allison, because if it hadn't been for you.
It was like they fled the country because they knew people were going to be pissed. We like showed up and you went to try to find somebody and they were like, they're not here. And you were like, what? What do you mean they're not here? And it's like, well, because they canceled all the flights, no one's here. It's like, you would think they would leave like one person behind to try to help people. So then I asked a Delta representative, because I was flying Delta. I was like, is there a courtesy phone? And this woman just looked at me and went, no. And I was like, okay. So then I was sort of like, you have to get a new flight. You just like, we have to get you the fuck out of this country.
Yeah. I was going to have a meltdown. Luckily,
so crazy.
You know, but thank God there was a flight. There was a ticket on your same flight, which, you know, it's easy enough to go from JFK to Chicago. And I just said, well, I guess I'm doing this. And you just looked at me and said, it's girl math, Meredith. It's girl math. Right. None of it's real.
It's girl math because you're going to get reimbursed for this flight that was canceled. So it's not like you're spending another however much, like $1,000 or whatever. You're going to get some of that reimbursed to you. So I was like trying to rationalize because I just saw like the life leave your eyes where you were like, I have to buy a new flight. Like, that's insane. but I maintain I'm right. Yeah.
You were completely right. And then of course,
it was so funny. They assigned you your seat and you're like, oh, I have a really bad seat. And I just was like, where did they seat you? Because I also had a very bad seat and you ended up being directly next to me. And I was like, yep, that tracks. That tracks.
Yeah.
So we ended up watching. It was totally fine. We ended up having a blast on the flight home because, first of all, no layover. What a dream. It's 7 hours. It's not that long. And we just ended up watching movies the whole time, which was great because I had just said on the show that it's so weird because we review so many films together, but we've actually seen very few movies together in person, together. And so we got to watch movies together on this flight. Two that we have been like waiting to watch for a very long time. We've got to watch Anyone But You and the latest Hunger Games. And we had a fucking blast.
It was so fun just sitting next to each other, typing out little notes to each other on our phones and just like holding it up. We look like such dorks. Although fair play to the girl that was on the other side of you who fell asleep while watching Zone of Interest.
So first of all, it was so funny because you were like, who the fuck is going to watch Zone of Interest on a plane? Which is a funny observation in and of itself. And then I just looked over and I was like, oh, this woman is watching it. And then I realized she had paused it and was fully unconscious. And I was like, yeah, that's what I would expect trying to watch Zone of Interest on a plane. She also seemed pretty young. Anyway, I don't know what the thought process was behind her putting that on. And then she like turned it off and she put on something like very stupid. And I was like, there you go. Good girl.
you figured it out. You got there eventually.
We love Zone of Interest, but that is not a plane movie and it was not the right time and not the right place.
You know what was a good plane movie? Anyone But You.
Listen, we had a good time. Was it a good movie? I don't know. Does it matter? No. I also think maybe they edited down the sex scenes, which to me is like 80% of why you watch Anyone But You, but that sex scene seemed real short on that flight. They like cut away so fast. I'm like, I'm pretty sure you see her butt. We were supposed to see her butt at some point. I didn't see Sydney Sweeney's butt, but whatever. I wanted it to be funnier. I'm not quite sure that's like the right vehicle for Sydney Sweeney. But Glenn, what a charming man, you know?
Yeah. Just truly. God, that guy's a movie star. I love him.
He really is. He's going to be great in Twisters. He's like Brad Pitt, you know, like an incredibly good looking, charming, funny guy who can also do drama. Like, he's a movie star. And I really like Sydney, too. I just think that she seemed to have trouble with like that dialogue.
She's not an effortless comedian. Like, she has a specific lane that she's very good at, which means that it works wonderfully in horror movies. And clearly she's great in melodrama, but to have to be snappy, like that's just not her vibe. It's like trying to put Dakota Johnson in a superhero movie. Oh wait, yeah, Sydney Sweeney was in that too.
Yeah. They were having a
sarcasm off, basically.
I almost said monosyllabic. They don't even do sarcasm though. It's just like that sort of, they can't modulate their voices in the same way. It's very strange, but it's weird because I thought there were a couple moments in Euphoria where she's absolutely losing her shit that I did find her very funny. It's just that specific romantic comedy lane. I don't know if that's for her.
Yeah. And I mean, I get why they would put her in one because you can't have someone that's that hot and not try it out.
Yeah. And like you put them next to each other. You put them next to each other and it's like Ken and Barbie. So it's like, no shit. I understand why they did it, but I'm sort of like, there's been some rumblings that they may do sequels, and I'm like, I don't know if we should do sequels. I'd like to see both of them do other stuff. And then The Hunger Games, pleasantly surprised for 2/3 of the film. And then for some fucking reason, that movie keeps going and makes you hate it. I was like, why is this still going? Like, it's so exciting. And they hit this climax. And then there's another third of the film. It's a great example of not every film needs to be like a sprawling 2.5 hour, 2 hour, 45 minute odyssey, because it really overstays its welcome. And up until then, I thought it was really engaging. And I thought the actors were great. The story's good. But yeah, it just goes on too fucking long.
Yeah. And that was, it served its purpose. We were excited to fill the time, because 2.5 hours, it's a long movie. Special shout out to Hunter Schafer, who was fantastic and
beautiful,
looks gorgeous. Very excited for Cuckoo, her upcoming movie with Dan Stevens. That's going to be so fun. But yeah, it just kind of like, it got sogged down and ended up kind of like this weird, gross, pasty, ruined paper mache situation when it had been really well constructed up until that last third.
That's a very visceral visual, and I agree. Yeah, it. yeah, but man, Hunter, talking about a movie star, she's got this like inner light about her. Whenever she shows up on screen, I'm like, like, it's Hunter. I get so happy. She's so beautiful. She's such a good actress. Yeah, man. I guess I got to talk about Civil War, right?
I was going to say, is this the time where you talk about how Civil War made you so angry?
Oh, my God. Okay, so no spoilers. I'll try to be careful because it did just come out. And I guess I need to change the format of how we talk about film on this podcast, because I think I'm going to retire the rec anti-rec sort of framing, because I had a friend text me and they were like, so I shouldn't see Civil War? And I was like, no, that's like not what my reviews mean. I don't mean like, if I don't like something, I'm not telling you to not see it, you know? But then I thought about the framing of anti-rec, and I'm like, that kind of does sound like what I'm saying when I anti-recommend something.
And yeah, I know, like, that does make sense. Yeah.
We're freaks and we see a lot of films, but like most people are like, they gotta watch, like, I mean, we also have to watch how we spend our fucking money. Like, you know, most people don't want to drop $30 to go see a film they're not going to like at IMAX. So when I say I don't like something, I understand some people might be like, great, so I don't have to see it. That is not what I'm saying. I do think there are redeeming qualities of Civil War, and I don't besmirch anyone who enjoyed it, and I'm not telling you to not go see it. I personally did not like it. Can we talk about Alex Garland for a second?
I always like to talk about Alex Garland. You know that.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's the thing. 28 Days Later is one of my all-time favorite films, full stop. I love that movie. I feel like since 28 Days Later, in regards to Alex Garland, it has been diminishing returns every single time he puts out a new film. And now we've arrived at Civil War, which is a real, real rudderless, half-baked screenplay that a lot of very smart people did enjoy, but I genuinely believe in my heart they are projecting meaning onto a film that doesn't even understand what it's about. Honestly, that is how I feel. And I have now heard two interviews, because I was like, let me hear this man out, because I do respect him as a filmmaker, and I want to hear what his thought process was behind this film. And I have now listened to two rambling interviews he has done where I am like, now more sure than ever, he has no fucking idea. And if that wasn't clear enough, we also have an interview with him where he says he doesn't love filmmaking anymore and he's thinking about retiring. And guess what? I think it might be a good idea to hit pause on his career and just step back for a second and really think deeply about the next thing he wants to do and make sure it's fully baked. And I hope he doesn't try to weigh in on American politics again because he doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about. Or journalism. The fact that he, again, I'm not going to get into spoilers because I, if you want to see it, I'm not telling you not to see it and I don't want to ruin it for you. The fact that he is saying this is a love letter to journalism is laughable because the journalists in this film are either sociopaths, complete fucking idiots, or like dead on the inside where I'm like, if this is your love letter to journalism, my God, my God. It seems like you hate journalists. Now, here's the thing. I don't want anyone to think I didn't like Civil War because it's not like left-wing enough or suitably, praising journalism or anything like that. That's not why I don't like Civil War. I don't like Civil War because there's no clear, coherent message. And as I said before, a lot of smart people I have seen project meaning onto this film. And I'm sort of like, where do you see that meaning in this screenplay? Because he clearly doesn't want to make any accusations about like what caused the Civil War. At one point, he refers to the Antifa massacre, but doesn't specify if that means Antifa was killed or did the killing. It's really, really cowardly in that way, where if you are going into this film and you want to see the boom, boom, you want to see like the big visual effects, you want to hear very loud gunfire, you're going to get that. I was the only woman in my screening of Civil War. And the only reason I'm mentioning that is I think there's going to be a strong overlap between fans of first person shooter video games and Civil War, because several sequences of this film have very, very graphic scenes with guns and are like, first point of view shooter video game style. And they're really well done and like visually captivating, but that is what this film is. It's a first person shooter video game, and people calling it like, I heard a reviewer call it like better than Apocalypse Now. And I'm just like, what are we doing? This movie? What are you talking about? I mean, calling it better than Apocalypse Now, I was stunned when I heard that. And then I heard another reviewer say, what this film is trying to say is that we don't talk to each other enough in this country. We're too fractioned. We're too balkanized. And that will eventually lead to civil war. Which to me, is a garbage privilege take, because how are you going to look at a transgender person? How are you going to look at a woman who could die in childbirth because her fetus isn't viable and say, hey, you're not extending your hand over the aisle to the people who fucking hate you and are trying to murder you enough? Fuck yourself.
It's always our problem, isn't it? We just don't understand them and we haven't done enough work to understand
like
them.
That is such a horrific way to interpret this film, which again, by the way, I don't even think this film is trying to say. I don't think this film is trying to say anything, but it's sort of like a Rorschach test in that way, where hearing people interpret a video game movie basically is very telling, because when I hear a reviewer say this is about how liberals are too isolated in our elite enclaves and we need to reach across the aisle more to fascists, I'm like, wow, you just brought that out of your head, dude. You just had that in your little noggin and you brought it out for this film. And I don't think Alex Garland necessarily thinks that, but you sure think that. And now I know that about you. But yeah.
And I mean, it's so frustrating because I looked it up, and of course, he's from a very wealthy, like well-off, like esteemed British family. His grandfather was like a Nobel Prize laureate who did, pioneered like infection prevention and like organ transplants kind of stuff. Like, you know, he's doing just fine. So of course, he feels like he needs to talk about American politics. And I admit, I haven't seen it yet, but I'm fascinated because another friend of mine sent me a text yesterday and said he loved it. And he also has taste that I really trust. So I'm really, really interested to see it myself, since I have no idea which side of the line I'm going to end up falling on.
I mean, I think it fails pretty much on every level other than the visual sort of shock and awe aspect, which again, as I said, there are some really, really cool sequences. There's a sequence in a Christmas time village that was like clearly supposed to be like a local town's little attraction for kids that is now just like soldiers are held up there that are, I think it's really cool, but it goes really quickly. We move right past it. And, you know, I really enjoy Stephen McKinley Henderson and Kirsten Dunst and Jesse Plemons. Like, it's a great cast. And I enjoy seeing those actors interact on screen. But there's just nothing to these characters. Really nothing there. And then there's supposed to be an emotional climax to this film that I find really laughable. Like, really badly done. Not emotionally impactful at all. Really, really poorly executed. And again, I went into this wanting to like it, but it's going to be a very divisive film. I think it got a B minus cinema score, which honestly is higher than I thought it would get. I thought it would get a C minus. Some people love it. Some people hate it. Some people were kind of like, whatever. Like, don't really care about it. So yeah. I'm glad you're going to see it, Meredith, because I am curious to hear your take.
Well, we've said
I really wish Kirsten Dunst had more to work with, because it's a tricky role where like she's playing like a real like PTSD suffering war photographer.
We don't know so any of those.
No, not at all. That's another thing you got to understand. I'm watching this and I'm like, I know people like this. And like, yeah, anyway, you'll see it. You'll know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Well, but, I think it's really frustrating because I know we've talked about this on the show too. Like, Alex Garland is like the king of needing one more pass to refine his ideas.
Yeah, and ends up I'd love to know his process, because I'm like, I've heard him interviewed a bunch, and it seems like he's just sort of like, he goes at it solo. I was a little encouraged because when he was saying he was going to retire, he said, or I'll co-direct something. And I got kind of excited by that, because I'm like, you have really good ideas. You just need somebody to do a second pass and be like, okay, so like, what is this character feeling in this moment? And he'll tell this person and they'll be like, okay, because you haven't shown that in the screenplay at all. And we need to start planting seeds earlier, so there's like an emotional payoff at the end of this, because yeah. I really wanted to feel stuff and he just didn't lay the groundwork for it at all.
Yeah. And that is so often his big problem. And he gets great actors. I mean, it seems like everybody knows that he's a guy who pretty much can't make a movie that's more than like 65% good. But it's because the 65% that is good is like fascinating. Yeah. And right. It's just like, for the love of God, man, like, let someone help you flesh out this idea so you don't just have a like boring slog followed by 10 genius minutes, men, or a really great, thrilling setup with an ensemble cast, which turns into something completely bonkers but pointless sunshine at the end. Like, just let somebody help you assemble this story.
Yeah, I mean, Civil War is really half-baked in the way that Men was half-baked. And I actually gave Men a pretty good review just for that last sequence, that if you've seen the film, if you know, you know. There's like a spectacular visual sequence, which again, you can tell is the thing he was excited to do in the film. He got this idea and he's like, that's going to be fucking a freak show on the screen. I got to make this movie. And it was like a completely wild moment surrounded by a half-baked screenplay. We have the same thing with Civil War. There are these action sequences that I could tell he's like real excited to film, and they are like spectacular and really visually compelling and very loud. And he has this story and these characters surrounding it where you're just like, what? I'm really baffled that people are like emotionally connecting to it at all. I'm just kind of like, again, every review I've heard, I'm like, wow, your take is much more interesting than this film, you know? And like, maybe that's indicative of the film bros who are like real fans of his. And there are some real smart critics who are fans of his who want this to be better than it is. And guys, I don't know what to tell you. It's like, it's very average, very, very average. And yeah, I wasn't a fan. But again, what does that mean? That's just my personal opinion. If you want to go see it, you should still want to go see it. If I really want to, if I'm excited about a movie and it starts getting bad reviews, I don't not see it, Meredith. Still go.
Well, yeah, you know, partly because you've already bought the ticket. So what's the point in not going? But
hey, I can get refunded. Excuse you. I'm A-list, so I can get refunded anytime I want. So I could get my money back. I just choose to go because I am a fan of cinema and I want to form my own opinions. So if you are excited about Civil War, you should go see it. You should form your own opinions. A lot of people whose opinions I respect very much liked it. Some of the other critics I really like did not like it. It's very divisive. So you gotta determine for yourself where you fall, you know?
Absolutely. And yeah, we don't have enough filmmakers making interesting failures. So let's support the guys that are out there doing it, even if it makes us furious, because we really could probably fund several small A24 movies by independent women directors with the amount that he spent on some of the explosions. But I'm still happy that it's out there. And we love seeing Kirsten
working. I'll never forget when Alex Garland was asked why he thought he was the best person to write the screenplay for Men. And again, not a good answer. Kind of rambling, didn't have a good answer. Yeah, I don't want Alex Garland to retire. I just want him to hit pause and write a screenplay that he's like well-informed enough on to write compelling characters. So like no American politics, no female perspective. Write something like personal that you, or something like completely fucking crazy again, like Annihilation, you know? But when he tries to weigh into American politics, and again, I asked you this, Meredith, when was the last time we had a non-American make a film about American politics, like write the screenplay, and it was good?
And I said, In the Loop, Armando Iannucci.
And I agree.
Yeah.
I was in the process of texting In the Loop to you when you texted In the Loop to me. And I was like, yeah, so maybe it has to be like really dark humor.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But I think I don't know. It's like you have to have something to say, even if that thing is, wow, all of this is pretty fucked, right? And like, you can't help but laugh. But if you want to make a deeper point, I mean, Americans can barely manage to do that in some interesting way.
As far as I understood the film, the point he seems to be trying to make is a civil war in the U.S. would be bad. And it's like, no shit, you know, like, but beyond that, he isn't interested in any of the kind of political factions when like, and the thing is, if you are apolitical and you try to tell a political story, you can't be mad when people then start thinking during your film, like, what is this about? There's a lot of film bros right now who are having like a very pretentious reaction to any kind of criticism of this film where they're like, you don't understand it. It's like, really, bro? Because I'm the one thinking during this film and you seem to have checked out completely and you're like, cool explosions. And the people afterwards who are like, what the fuck was that about? You're like, you didn't understand it. Explain it to me. Because the explanations I'm hearing are you projecting your own meaning onto this film, where it's like, there's nothing in the text. There's nothing there. And guess what? That's okay. If you just wanted to deliver us like a visual feast, you know, cool. In IMAX, it looks awesome, you know, and with that sound system, like chef's kiss. But yeah, this reaction of you're too dumb to understand this apolitical political film. It's like, go fuck yourself, man. Like, I don't think Alex Garland would want that nonsense on his plate, you know?
He doesn't. He would be like hard pressed to figure out how to respond to it. I did appreciate that my friends who loved it said, at this point, I think I can explain his work better than he can. And I was like, yeah, That
I bet you can.
But also, this is an example of like, I mean, I thought about it. I was like, no, I get what you're saying. But then you're like, the film bros, you know, ascribing all these meanings. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, I think that's what he relies on, like, for people to do the work of finding it themselves, but without having enough of a sense of what he wants to say to make that feel right.
Yeah. And I think he's getting a pass from a lot of people. It feels like a real The Emperor Has No Clothes moment, because I feel like up until now, like with Annihilation, Ex Machina, he has these like cool nuggets of ideas that film bros have really built their like empire on, where they're like, he clearly has a unique mind, unique ideas, and that is true, but that doesn't make a good overall filmmaker. And I feel like he's a great sequence director, but his characters just fall apart. Like, there's no development. There's not really a coherent overall arc. And if you try to point that out, they get very defensive, I think, because it's so rare that we have like an auteur filmmaker like him. And I'm really excited that like A24 invested a lot of money in this and it's doing well at the box office. I think that's good, you know? But you got to be open to criticism, where it's like, this does not work overall. And if you enjoyed it, great. But if we want to keep seeing, you know, unique filmmakers, hopefully who are not all wealthy white British men, get a chance to tell their stories, then we have to be interested in like the quality of the work.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
Wow. So, we spent a lot of time on that.
I know. Sorry. I'm excited that you're going to see it, because I'm interested to hear your thoughts. Should we talk about the Joker trailer?
Oh my God. Yes, please.
Totally outdo. Yeah. So, you have to stand the fact that incels are mad, right? Because Lady Gaga is playing Harley Quinn and it's a musical and they don't know how to feel. They're like, oh my God, we got a Joker sequel. How exciting. And then the news came out that it was going to be a musical and that they cast Lady Gaga, and you could just feel Reddit lose its fucking mind. Like, maybe that's not fair to Reddit, but like 4chan, you felt 4chan like lose its fucking mind. Right. I was not a fan of the original Joker, just because I thought it was like not even an homage to better films, but just like kind of a blatant ripoff of them. Like,
yeah.
Well, I mean, comedy was, being the, yeah. Yeah. Like frame for frame ripoff of better films. And not particularly interesting in any way. I was bored through a lot of it. But I think, you know, credit where credit is due in the sequel, I think it's an interesting idea to have. I'm assuming the musical acts are going to be a hallucination on the Joker's part. And I think that's at least like an interesting idea. Now, those musical sequences might be frame for frame ripoffs of other musicals, in which case I'll be like, oh, here we fucking go again. But at least that's like a little kernel of something to hold on to, where I'm like, oh, maybe like, and maybe Lady Gaga will be fun, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I'm really going to see this for the Lady Gaga of it. Like, that woman commits to the bit and she looks like she's going to be completely insane in this movie. And I'm really kind of excited to see that, because it's not like Joaquin Phoenix doesn't have quite the reputation as a very serious actor. So how that energy feeds off itself is going to be really fun to see. And yeah, again, it's just like, oh, you guys don't realize how big the overlap between super gay theater nerds and comic book nerds really is, do you?
Yeah, they have no, I feel like that is such an untapped market, because like so many gay people love comic books. And I thought it was really brilliant actually to cast Lady Gaga, because that removes the Joker from like the film bro incel sphere, which, by the way, I'm not calling all film bros incels or anything like that. But again, I was the only woman in my screening of Joker. And it introduces this other world of like the musical theater nerds and the gay kids. And it's like, and queer people in general who maybe ordinarily wouldn't go to a Joker movie. I think that's really brilliant casting because it's like, wow, you just expanded your audience tenfold.
Yeah. Well, and this is a great time to mention that the People's Joker, the queer fan fiction cinematic event that had to fight a mighty legal battle after premiering at some film festivals, is finally coming out now. So highly recommend people seek that out, because if you like comic books, fandom, and gay shit, it is going to be for you.
Do you or do you not like gay shit? Get into it. What are you doing?
Yeah. We've talked about it all the time.
Yeah. I really like that final shot in the trailer of the lipstick on the glass and him smiling into it. I thought that was a very pretty shot.
Yeah. There are some striking visuals. We'll see. Like, it's so utterly unnecessary as a sequel that I'm almost back around to be curious, you know? Like, they have to actually do something creative with it.
Same. I'm in the same boat where I was like, oh God, a sequel to this thing. And that, first of all, so many of the best actor wins. I'm not talking about Killian, but like Brendan Fraser and Joaquin Phoenix have been like embarrassing. Like, I can't believe this actor won for this role. So when they announced the sequel, I was like, oh my God. And literally the only thing I find interesting is when they said it was going to be a musical and then Lady Gaga, I was suddenly like back in. So credit to them. I'm going to see this fucking thing. I don't know how it's going to be, but we'll see. Guys, I also saw Monkey Man, Dev Patel's directorial debut, which is very exciting. Speaking of supporting young, new filmmakers, thank you, Jordan Peele. That's the reason this thing got released. Again, like there are elements of this film I find really cool. And I would really love to see what Dev Patel makes next, because clearly he has like a very clear vision, very energetically directed. You know, there's like, it's a little sloppy, but also if you know the story of how this film was made, it sounds like it was a fucking nightmare. They had to change a bunch of it during COVID. He got very hurt during it. They had to like put a pin in his hand. He had to make a bunch of directorial changes on the fly. Like, it sounds like an absolute nightmare and a miracle that any film came out of it. You know, the action's great. He looks amazing. There's a scene in the film where he takes off his shirt and the women in the film cheer. And I was like, absolutely. Like, take your moment, baby. You look great. You know, like, I loved seeing him as an action star, and I love that he directed it. It's a good time. It's not perfect, obviously, but whose first film is, you know? And yeah, if you're an action fan, definitely check out Monkey Man. I don't know. There's a story element to it where there's some transgender characters that I think is, again, underbaked. But I like that he attempted to incorporate their narrative into the world he was building. I don't know if it was 100% effective, but I appreciate that he attempted it. Can we talk about Ripley?
Yes, we can.
Have you started it or no?
I have. I'm on, okay. I think I just finished the second episode. So we can talk about the first two for sure.
Okay. Well, I'll talk very generally and no spoilers. So okay. And we've talked about this before on the show. The film, The Talented Mr. Ripley, is one of our all-time favorite films. It is one of the rare films you and I watch together. Because not in a theater, but one of the times I came over, we put on The Talented Mr. Ripley and we bonded over the fact that like it's one of our all-time favorite films. So when I heard that there was this Netflix series, I mean, it was originally a Showtime series, but Showtime kicked it to Netflix. And then I found out it was black and white. I was like furious because I was like, oh my God, one of the amazing things about The Talented Mr. Ripley is this like lush cinematography and the fact that like everyone in that film looks so impossibly beautiful and the colors are so rich and like it's just like a visual feast, the movie. So when I found out it was like this, the remake or the Netflix series is like a neo-noir, black and white, kind of like a dialed down performance by Andrew Scott, who can be very over the top, but he's like pretty reserved in it. I was like, they are completely going to drain the life out of this thing. They've completely erased its charm. It's going to suck. And then I watched it, everyone. And I should have known better, first of all, because it's directed by Steven Zaillian, who is an amazing, it's written and directed by him. Amazing writer, hugely accomplished. I mean, like, the man wrote Schindler's List. What more do you need to know? So I should have, like, bit my tongue then. But I just, like, couldn't imagine it having the same amount of charm. And I will say this about Ripley. Very wisely, they have steered away from the movie in almost every way. It's in black and white. It's a dialed down Ripley. You know, Dickie is very different because how are you ever going to match the beauty of Jude Law? You can't. So you cast a guy who's just like classic rich asshole. And I fucking love it. I love it. It's so beautiful in the black and white in ways that really surprised me. I can't believe this thing is on Netflix. And I can't believe more people aren't watching. I mean, it's doing pretty well, but like everybody should watch this. I think it's stunning. Stunning.
Oh, I mean, I agree. So far, I'm loving it. And yeah, my only advice is just like, don't think about the film because it has to be its own thing and you'll take much more away from it and enjoy it much more if you recognize that it's going to be its own thing. And yeah, I guess like when it comes to crime novels, it's very hard to imagine definitive versions of a specific story. It's almost like, you know, we can live with having Pride and Prejudice remade like every 10 years till the end of time. Like it feels wrong to be precious about a character like this. So it's cool that they did actually like put it together. And I'm shocked that you had opinions before you actually saw it and had to revise them. Like, aren't you always, well, you know, you're always right.
Yeah, I know. Well, I told you, I had seen the trailer and Andrew Scott seemed very reserved in the trailer. And I was like, oh, no. Like, what did they do to Tom Ripley? And he's just playing it differently, again, wisely, because I think he, you know, Matt Damon was actually my least favorite part of the movie, the way he played it. I think he was just like slightly miscast. He's good, but he's not as good as like Philip Seymour Hoffman, you know, like, or Jude Law, or Gwyneth Paltrow. He's just a little out of his league. But Andrew Scott, I think very wisely, is steering away from him and just doing his own thing. And once you see it in its entirety in context, he's fucking brilliant because he's always fucking brilliant, you know? And he has one of the best, most captivating faces. And a lot of what's happening to Ripley is like interior. And you just watch his face and it's like mesmerizing. The scene with Dickie in the boat is so different from the movie and it's like amazing, you know? But I just want to watch this series forever because, and I'm so excited because, you know, there are several Talented Mr. Ripley books. And I hope they keep making this, you know, I would love it to become like Poirot or something.
Oh, I mean, wouldn't that be beautiful?
I hope so. I think like they're doing good enough numbers where, but they must have spent a fucking truckload of money on this thing. The fact that they shot on location in Italy, like, can you imagine logistically what a nightmare that must have been?
Oh God. I mean, I can't. I mean, that's just, when has the film industry ever actually had a home that in Italy that wasn't completely shambolic in the best way? But the reason why all their movies are dubbed is that everybody talks so loud on the set that they need to ADR everything. And that's been true for like 55, 60 years.
I'm just thinking of like logistically, like all of the roads are fucking falling apart and you got to get like crews and trucks up these like winding roads to get to villas to shoot. Like, fuck me, you know, like, let alone how expensive that must be. So I don't know. Like, I don't know if they're going to have the budget or if Netflix is going to want to do it again, you know? But the idea that we could keep going with this is so exciting, especially having seen the quality of the first season. I'm kind of like, please, can we have nice things? Can I get a season 2 through 6, you know?
For you, I hope it happens. I desperately do.
Who do I have to write to make it happen? So did you have any recommendations before I just keep trucking along?
I specifically want to shout out the new Criterion channel service, Criterion 24/7, which is just Turner Classic Movies, but the Criterion collection, and there's zero commercials, and it just is anything. They just throw movies up. And it's going to be perfect for napping on rainy days, as you said. Uh-huh. But yesterday, I got served in succession Jules Dassin's The Naked City, Grey Gardens, and then Daisies. And it's
unbelievable.
Like, it's almost like they know me. But like,
banger after banger after banger. No, it's not that they don't. It's not that they know you. It's that someone exactly like you is programming, which is equally as exciting.
Yes. But it's so real that decision paralysis can set in when you have all these options. So, of course, just taking it away and saying, well, you know, you can just like bop in and watch the last 20 minutes of The Discreet Charm of the Bourgeoisie. And then like something else like Mad Max will be on. It feels just very, it takes away some of the sense of like weight that a lot of the classics can feel sometimes where you're like, am I really in the mood for this? And it's just there in the background. So everybody should already have a Criterion channel subscription if they can afford it, because it's a beautiful service. But also if you do have it, oh, just get in there. It's going to be perfect.
For sure. Either get an account or have a really nice friend like Meredith who gives you her password, as is my case.
I need you to watch some of these movies. There's just no way around it.
I got to get into it. You know what happened? When we got back from Scotland, I was so behind on everything I needed to watch and listen to podcasts. I got like overwhelmed, but I'm finally caught up. So I think I can actually watch now. I wanted to talk about The Regime, which just wrapped up on HBO. This thing is so fucking fascinating, not because it's good, but because it's bad. And I'm fascinated by the way in which it failed, because it has an absolute all-star cast. Kate Winslet at the helm. Love her. Some really, really amazing writers who are very accomplished and have had a lot of success. My husband, who you think I would know how to pronounce his name, but I surely don't. Is it Matthias Schoenaerts? Is that how he says it?
That sounds like it.
I don't know. Sorry, husband. He'll forgive me. It'll be fine. Who is like the hottest man to ever live. So you think, like, you know, funny premise. It's like a made-up Eastern European country where Kate Winslet is playing this, like, insane dictator. Like, it is just, like, ripe for perfect comedy. And it pretty much fails on every level and is not good. And I can't recommend it. But I did finish it because I was so fascinated by, like, its weird tone and, like, it seems like they lost their nerve a bit with the dark satirical comedy, and they have these like oddly serious moments sort of like patched into this show that is otherwise trying to be like in the loop. So the tone's very muddled. It's not, it needs to be like 25% funnier. And I can't say I really cared about any of the characters. And like, it is just like very fascinating to me, because if you put everything on paper, it's like, oh, certified banger. This is going to be a hit. People are going to love this. It's going to be so funny and so good. And it's not. And I really doubt we'll get a second season because I don't know anybody else who watched it.
Oh, I mean, it's sad because you don't like to see these misfires, but also like, as we, you know, similar to when we were talking about non-Americans making American politics, like political movies, it's really hard to do that like satire of a fake foreign country.
That's part of the problem, I think, that it's like this made up country because clearly they didn't want to offend anybody. And like, I'm not saying that was a bad idea because I think, you know, British or American writers writing about a real Eastern European country would be a bad idea. But it sort of makes you not care about anything that's happening because it's like, okay, yeah, like everything's real and everything's fake and ridiculous and why should I care about these characters or anything that's happening? But I did want to talk about it just on the off chance anybody else watched it, because I like to troubleshoot when stuff doesn't work, because I want to know like why it didn't work and how it could have been made better, because to me, that's much more interesting than just saying like, it's not good. I didn't like it, you know?
I was so fascinated by was like, okay, so what is this map onto? Like, it for sure doesn't work if you just let it stand alone as a fantasia. But when I was trying to find a way to connect it to something, like, what is it saying? I couldn't. And it felt like what might have been possible to connect to, like, real world events or real issues felt like they'd already been said. And I'm like, yes, why did we need this right now? And there was no answer that was satisfying.
That's a part of the problem, because it has been parodied elsewhere better. And you just can't help but think of that the entire time, where it's kind of like, this is just like mediocre on every level. And I know some people were kind of dinging Kate Winslet's performance because she chose to do this like kind of strange speaking impediment. Like, she kind of talks out of the side of her mouth with a little bit of a lisp. I think she's really good and I think she's funny. I just wish the material met her, you know? Mm-hmm. So before we run out of time, wanted to read a recommendation that Brian sent in. Again, if you're a supporter of mine at patreon.com/AliceInKilkenny, you can send questions, comments, recommendations, and basically skip the line and I'll read them on the show. So Brian writes, I just finished the graphic novel Bad Dream, a dream story written by Nicole Maines with art by Rye Hickman, and it is so good. The story was moving. I nearly cried a couple of times, and the art is fantastic. It's the backstory for the mainline DC Comics version of the character Dreamer that was created for the Supergirl TV series and who was played by Nicole. But people who didn't watch that show can follow the story just fine. It's got some similarities with the origins of the TV version, but mostly does its own thing while also, near as I can tell, incorporates elements in Nicole's own childhood. For those who don't know, she was the Jane Doe in a landmark trans rights case in the state of Maine in 2014. Oh, shit. That sounds amazing. So that is the graphic novel Bad Dream, a dream story by Nicole Maines. That's amazing. I didn't know she was the Jane Doe.
That is amazing.
Yeah. Wow.
How cool. That sounds really cool. I will check it out.
Thank you, Brian. And yeah, if anybody else has recommendations or if something cool or interesting happened to you, I like party anecdotes, guys. So like, if you have a funny little story you want to write in, I'm into it. Let's be flexible on this show, you know? Meredith, was there anything else you wanted to recommend?
Not at the moment. I'm still getting myself resituated after traveling, even though it's been a week. And
I know,
I'm catching up on stuff.
I'm still a fucking mess. And I'm like quietly devastated because the TikTok algorithm has clocked that I take melatonin, possibly because data sharing with Amazon. I don't know, guys. I don't know how it works. But I'm starting to see all these videos about like, and I knew this, but like there's never been a long-term clinical trial on melatonin and people are taking like a lot of it. And so there's a bunch of doctors who are like, hey, maybe don't take like 20 milligrams of it. And I currently take 22 milligrams of it. So I'm like, oh, should I stop taking this? But I fully will not be able to sleep if I don't take it. So I'm trying to figure out what else I could take. I know there's, what's the other one they always tell people to take for insomnia? There's like a safer version of it. Not safer, but like they have done long-term trials on it and they know it won't like permanently fuck your REM cycle.
Yeah. I mean, so, look yeah. into it. Also, listeners, if you have any advice on how to
I'm always a little like, I'm always a little shy to be like, send me medical advice. Only if you like know what you're talking about. Please don't. Oh, valerian root. Supposedly valerian root is like good for it. So I have this other stuff like saved where I'm like, oh, I should try this instead of taking 22 milligrams of melatonin every night. But yeah, I need to be put under or I won't be able to sleep. So I guess if you are qualified to give medical advice, not if you're just like a guy who's listening and you're like, I have an opinion, let me know. And follow us both on social media at Blue Sky, on Instagram. I'm still on Twitter, unfortunately. You can follow me there. Go to my Patreon, patreon.com/AllisonKilkenny, for as little as $5 a month. You get to send questions, comments, concerns, all that stuff, and we'll read it on the show. And if you don't want to sign up for the Patreon, you can just go to lighttreason.news, click the donate button, and keep the show going so I can pay Meredith, pay my hosting fees, pay for equipment. I'm definitely going to need a new computer soon. Holy shit. I don't know what's going on over here, but it covers all of those expenses. You guys are the best. Have a wonderful rest of your weekend. And while you're at it, get out there and cause a little trouble.